The closure of restaurants and pubs serving food, limits on gatherings in private homes, wedding numbers down to just 25, sporting fixtures suspended, travel restrictions into and out of Dublin. Rising COVID-19 infection rates in the capital are expected to result in the government today ratifying a series of restrictions for the city and county, on foot of recommendations from the National Public Health Emergency Team, which were considered last night by the COVID Oversight Group, composed of senior government officials. Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, is a member of that group and he's with us here in studio. A very good morning to you, Paul Reid, and thank you for coming in to talk to us this morning. We'll talk about these Dublin restrictions in a moment, but first of all, you spoke yesterday at your briefing of the country having reached a very concerning juncture in relation to COVID. What are you seeing in the COVID figures and in our hospitals that gives you cause for concern?
Yeah, concern is particularly related to the facts and the evidence that we're seeing over the past week and few weeks. I mean, ultimately what we're seeing now is the average cases per day nationally at about 246, and that's been a 39% increase over the last 7 days per daily cases. Increasingly concerning is that 39% of the cases that we're now seeing emerging are emerging from the community. So they're not emerging from outbreaks, they're not emerging from close contacts. So the source is somewhere within the community and can't be actually pinpointed. So high transmission levels in the cases, high positivity levels increasing. But also from a HSE perspective, we have started, thankfully, from the first phase of a lower base of hospital cases and ICU, but that has been significantly increasing over the past week, 10 days. So from 23 hospitalizations to now 77 this morning, and from 6 ICU to now 14 this morning. So they're the concerning factors that we're seeing emerging.
And at this stage, are the hospitals able to cope, or is the pressure coming on?
Yeah, well, obviously we're heading into a very difficult period ahead as we head into winter, which is normally a very difficult period anyway. So right now, the hospitals are coping in terms of, but it's not just ICU. We're now dealing with stepping back up our services. We're now heading into a winter period. So we will see our hospital system coming under pressure, but specifically related to COVID cases. Yes, it's coping, but we are seeing now emerging in Dublin some of the cases. It doesn't take a large number of cases to start freezing wards and beds. So we are seeing some of the Dublin hospitals coming under significant pressure with the positive cases that they're dealing with.
So when you say beds and wards being frozen, a case, that involves what?
A COVID case that has been identified or being treated within a hospital system, or may have been tested in the hospital system and has emerged. So you have to obviously isolate and you have to protect and clean. So it does give a period of time where wards are out of service, and that constrains an already constrained capacity in our hospital system. So it's not overwhelmed right now, but it is a point where we're seeing the impact of the rising cases in our hospitals.
All right, we'll come back to some of this in a moment or two, but the restrictions now that we're expecting in Dublin, you've had sight of them. The HSE has represented on NPHET, and as I said, you're a member of this oversight group. Are we heading in the direction that's been widely reported this morning for Dublin?
Well, ultimately, I am on the oversight group, but ultimately this is a decision for government, and the Cabinet Committee will meet later on, as you know, and government will make decisions later on, and ultimately government make those decisions. But ultimately what I was outlining at our own media press conference yesterday, we are at an important kind of crossroads. Nobody wants to go back, and particularly me from a health service perspective. Lockdowns significantly impact on the health service as well. We see a lot of people coming through with anxiety and stress and tension and mental health issues. And so that's nowhere where any of us want to go. So
we are going back.
Well, I think what it is about right now, one way or the other, whatever decisions emerge from government today, it is about everybody now really taking the issue very serious, really taking the public health measures that we have to take. If we keep going on the road we're going, we're heading into a road that's in trouble. And we're heading into a road that could get us back to the point where we have to take more restrictive action. So there is a time for we really need to put the call to arms to the
public
again.
But we know a big source of infection are gatherings in private homes, and yet it's the restaurants and the pubs that serve food that have been targeted here. Out of the blue, they've been told last night, expect your businesses to be closed down this evening.
Yeah, and I think that's a kind of point that we have to help the public just to understand even more, because there's a tendency to marginalise the issue into certain settings, whether it's meat plants, nursing homes, schools, or restaurants. But actually what's happening, as I just said at the start, 40% of the cases emerge from the community. So in essence, it's brought from the community back into the home. and highly transmits from the community back into the home. So it is where people gather, it is where people congregate in public settings as well. So
but the number of cases that have been traced back to restaurants and the pubs that are open are a fraction of those that are occurring in homes.
Yeah, but I think the public experts are the guys who can identify. It is about where people meet. It is where people... And we've seen instances where the reality of it is you might see a group of six people meeting, and we can see this happening. And it isn't that one or two persons get affected. It can be five of them get affected very quickly, or infected very quickly. So it is about transmission in various settings being brought back to the home. And
but by closing those restaurants and pubs that are open, do you not actually risk, you know, increasing the number of gatherings in people's homes, because that's the place where people they'll visit the off licence, and then they're more likely perhaps to gather in private homes than in a controlled environment of a pub or a restaurant?
No, and this is where I was sending out yesterday our own briefing. We need to get back to the real basics that have worked, and it's not just about one single isolated measure or one sector that we need to address. It's about a whole suite of measures. It's about every one of us today reducing the number of contacts that we have. This works. It's about every one of us today. As you meet somebody, nearly even treat that yourself may be positive, not just that the person you're meeting may be positive. And how would you protect them? And how would you protect yourself? So it is a suite of the really good basic measures that make a big difference.
Right. There's also talk of restrictions, reported restrictions on third level colleges and universities. And we'll be talking to a college president a bit later. And the point he'll be making is that the universities should be treated at this stage as an essential service in the same way the schools are and childcare. And that there should be that kind of focus allowance, if you like, for them to operate in a much more normal way than has been suggested.
Well, I think what's happened to date is as sectors emerge and come back, there's lots of guidance and will be, and there are for the third level institutions and that sector. And that's what we're actually working with them from a public health perspective to increase the awareness and the guidance that they should operate under. And that works. And that's the way we'd be working with that sector too.
Well, the schools, as I said, are regarded as essential service, a priority. I think it's well acknowledged at this stage. And you were briefing yesterday that there have been a rising number of cases in schools since they reopened at the beginning of the month. I think 96 schools have had tests carried out, 35 positive results. But the HSE, you don't believe that schools or school pupils are a source of transmission. In fact, it's quite the opposite. If they do arise in schools, I think you're saying that they come in from the community. How can you be sure of that at this early stage in the school year?
Yeah, I think what's happened in schools in the last couple of weeks is worth just reflecting for your listeners. We have, over the past couple of weeks, been working with schools. Now, if you take it, a significant number of our cases, let's say the 23rd, last week in August, came from schools. About 17% of our total tests came from, swab tests came from schools because people were getting back. And that was a positivity rate of about 1.2%, 1.4%. In the following week, we doubled the numbers. About 36% of tests came from 0 to 10 age group. But the positivity reduced, but it's now 0.5%. So we are increasingly seeing people coming forward with symptoms, but not testing positive. And that's okay, that's good, because people are taking good public health advice. What isn't happening is that the high transmission levels between children and between children and adults. So of the 2,000, we have 96 schools, as you mentioned, 35 cases across those schools where we've been managing within those 96 schools, 2,100 people between children and teachers being tested, and 35 cases identified. So we're not seeing a high transmission level between children, thankfully.
What teachers are saying, though, that delays, as they see it, in getting results back mean that students and teachers are staying away from school while they wait for the all clear. And they're asking, why can't they get the fast-tracked tests like Stephen Donnelly had, so they would know, perhaps even within a matter of hours, that they can go back to school?
Well, first of all, I do want to acknowledge we've worked really closely, and I want to acknowledge the work of principals who've acted really well with us over the past number of weeks, working with our public health teams who go in straight away, work through whether a pod should be closed, whether a classroom should be closed, and never to the stage where a recommendation of a school should be closed from our public health team. So it's working quite well with us. In terms of our tests and turnaround, what we have seen is very quickly the classroom being identified, their contacts being identified, including parents, and the test. And in general, we have those tests turned around and identified within 24 hours. And that's proven to be very effective. And there has been a really good collaboration between the schools and our public health teams.
What proportion of those 2,000 individuals would have been turned around in that period in 24 hours?
A vast majority have been turned around. We have a very close, we're working, we have 3 calls a day with our public health teams and schools and our own HSE organisation to assess where what issues are emerging. So, you know, I think we always believed the first few weeks would be very challenging. And we certainly are experiencing that. But I must say, overall, it's been managed really well, thankfully to really great work by principals.
I think we also all understand, though, that testing is the key weapon in the battle against COVID. The World Health Organization saying at the outset of this, test, test and test again. The HSE, you were promising 100,000 tests a week back in March at the outset of all this. We're still well short of that. Where's the pinch point? Is it the labs? Is it the test centres? Are there staffing issues?
Yeah, well, just to take what we've built, where we are now, and briefly where we're going to get to. We built this system midstream. 7 months ago in Ireland, nobody knew what a testing and tracing system was to the extent that we have it now. We did our 1 millionth test earlier this week, which is a significant milestone on the island. Last week we did 82,500 swabs completed across the island.
And but the actual number of test results coming back was lower, wasn't it? 76,000.
But that's just a lag between the swabbing thing. So 77,000.
It's still well short of the 100,000, which was the benchmark that was set.
And just to be clear, what we set out during the summer was to develop the capacity to deliver 100,000 tests. And that's, during the quieter period, exactly what we did. We built that capacity. Now, we now have 46 labs on the island with a capacity of 100,000. What we do on a weekly basis is schedule out our tests from a number of perspectives. What tests are coming through from the community, what tests are coming through contacts, and our programme, serial testing programme. Now, we have to recalibrate that on any given day.
You had to suspend the tests at the meat plants because the pressure came on elsewhere. The capacity wasn't there.
No, what we did at that time was absolutely the right thing to do. What we saw emerging was a full day's capacity, 15,000 coming through just from the community alone and close contacts. And the reality of it is the positivity coming through from community, close contacts can be up to 20%. So what we did was we rescheduled for 3 days the meat processing plants. We tested 17,500 employees in the meat test processing plants. The positivity rate is about 0.3% right now. We rescheduled for 3 days because we primarily focused on the symptomatic referrals coming through from the community, which is where the transmission primarily emerges from.
Just a final word. We were talking earlier to Fergal Hickey in relation to ICU capacity. The number of beds, and again, this figure was given yesterday, 281 ICU beds, which is actually fewer than there were at the beginning of this month. The figure was 356. Why have 75 ICU beds gone out of the system as we face into the winter and possibly a second COVID surge?
Yeah, just briefly explain, and I heard Fergal's discussion with you, and I highly respect Fergal's view, and it was one of the first few meetings I met to get a greater understanding from my perspective when I joined it. HSE, but ICU. We started pre-COVID with 225 beds, which Fergal is absolutely correct, is about half the capacity we would like to have and should have. As part of COVID and our funding, we got an extra 35 beds in place, 255, and in the last few months, we've developed a capacity of 282. The extra figure that you say was some great work done by emergency consultants, like Sir Catherine Mudderway, who you've had on, our ICU consultants. They brought a capacity which was building more surge capacity when it's needed to over 300 beds.
Yeah, I know, but there was a recommendation many years ago for 500 ICU beds, and the number, and we're right in the middle of a pandemic, has gone down, and you're back more as to where we were before we'd ever heard of COVID-19.
No, the extra capacity that we can bring on is related to extra staff. During the first phase, we trained up to 2,000 staff. An ICU bed takes 6 nurses comparison to 1 nurse for an ordinary bed. So we had to train up extra nurses if we need that surge capacity. But I do share the concerns, and part of our funding as part of our 600 million funding secured from government is to invest more in more ICU beds.
So how many more ICU beds will there be then?
Well, we're going to launch our winter plan just next week, and part of that will be bringing on more ICU beds.
How many?
As part of it. Well, ultimately, if you saw what we did during the pandemic, we got close to 400 beds. So we will bring it on as we need in surge. But I would make the point again to your listeners, that's why the actions we take now are really important. We can't have a situation where we have, and every one of those people today is our relations, could be passing to an ICU bed. We can't let it happen.
All right, Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, thanks very much for talking to us.